Welcome to the debate. Today, we're tackling really the core mechanism behind how we shift from that state of kind of constant automatic vigilance to a state of sustained embodied trust. This is really the goal, isn't it, of these neurosystemic recalibration protocols like the multimodal present moment framework. How do we actually resolve those maladaptive threat responses that get hardwired into the system?
Right. It's absolutely fundamental if we want effective intervention. We know the brain and body are in this constant dialogue about safety, but the real question is precisely how that communication gets updated. And then, crucially, how it gets locked in for, long-term psychological and physiological stability.
Exactly. And that brings us neatly to our central question for today. When we successfully implement these, let's call them micro-correction safety loops, is the primary, the indispensable driver of efficacy, the direct generation of a prediction error right down in the primitive subcortical layer? Or is it the subsequent high-level strengthening of the brain-body regulatory pathways, what we often call neurovisceral integration? So I'll be arguing that the core update really has to happen through that direct subcortical intervention and sensory correction first.
Okay. And I'm going to contend that while that initial sensory correction is, yes, necessary to get the ball rolling, the lasting efficacy, what leads to true functional recovery, actually comes from the integrated regulatory function. It's about strengthening the connectivity between those primitive survival circuits and the more conscious regulating layers of the brain. So for me, the lasting change is in the architecture, not just the single corrective event.
Okay, so my position really starts with recognizing where the problem originates, that deep, pervasive feeling of unsafety. It's governed entirely outside the rational thinking cortex. Wouldn't you agree? It lives in those ancient evolutionary emotional motivational systems Panksepp identified, the fear system or the panic grief systems. When these systems are chronically stuck, let's say, they operate under this really outdated high-stakes assumption. This maladaptive prior that basically screams, the world is dangerous, stay ready.
Precisely. And look, if the system governing safety doesn't operate on logic or linear thought, then our typical top-down cognitive efforts, just telling yourself calm down, they inevitably fall short. As Damasio pointed out so well with the somatic marker hypothesis, the language of these deep systems is fundamentally physiology, not words. MMPM's unique power, I think, lies in bypassing those failed rational pathways and actually speaking the body's native language. We introduce new, clean sensory data, like a gentle rhythmic touch or a slow, regulated exhale, that directly contradicts the danger prediction, and that's what generates the necessary prediction error, compelling the system to update its primal safety model. The solution has to be rooted in the body, correcting the prior right where it lives.
Okay, I absolutely grant that the subcortical input is the necessary foundation. You really can't address anxiety without communicating safety to those primitive layers. However, and this is the key distinction for me, I believe true lasting recalibration has to move beyond just a momentary sensory fix. A single perfect prediction error, well, it's just not enough to secure physiological stability for the long haul. The system needs to achieve what we might call a kind of resting platform of physiological regulation, or maybe base safety.
A crucial distinction, yes.
And that stability, well, it's achieved by nudging the nervous system towards sustained ventral vagal complex dominance, that state of safe social engagement that Porges described in his polyvagal theory. The measurable long-term positive effects we see, things like sustained increases in heart rate variability, or HRV, which is a key marker of flexible autonomic control, these are achieved, I argue, through strengthening the overall regulatory architecture. The neurovisceral integration model defines this. So I contend that MMPM's ultimate success isn't just the microcorrection itself, but the resulting measurable improvement in the two-way street, the connectivity between higher-order brain regions like the medial prefrontal cortex, MPFC, and the anterior cingulate cortex, ACC, and those deeper subcortical and autonomic systems. It's this enhanced connectivity that facilitates robust emotional flexibility. And that's what defines functional recovery in my view.
I see why you emphasize the sustainability, the integration piece, but I would frame the order of operations a bit differently. If we really accept the premise that the brain, right down to its most ancient parts, is a fundamentally predictive organ, and the evidence for this is mounting, then the most critical action has to be correcting the prediction itself. Recent neurobiological studies, including work by Tabatis and others, they demonstrate that even these subcortical sensory pathways operate entirely according to predictive coding principles. So if the maladaptive prior resides in those lower neural layers, if the fear system is basically programmed to expect threat, then the corrective action must be applied right there first, directly, somatically. We use specific sensory cues, a long, slow exhale to engage the vagal break, or gentle self-touch using C-tactile afferents, precisely to target those specific emotional engines and resolve the contradiction exactly where that expectation of danger originates. The correction, I believe, is the essential precursor to any durable integration.
That's an interesting point about the predictive nature extending so deep. But I still question the durability of that low-level correction if the higher executive functions aren't really equipped to process and anchor it. You know, while the subcortex generates the initial prediction and definitely needs that correction, the literature on neurovisceral pathways strongly suggests that it's the improved connectivity that allows cortical regions to integrate those new, momentary patterns into some kind of coherent meaning. If the cortex, the MPFC and AC, aren't adequately regulating the subcortical and autonomic systems, well, those micro-corrections just remain fragmented, don't they? You might get that immediate relief, the anxiety readout lessens temporarily, sure, but the system's overall flexibility, its ability to generalize that feeling of safety across different contexts, that won't improve long term.
We're only patching the symptom at the subcortex. We haven't really fixed the chronic regulatory failure higher up.
Okay, but let's talk about the immediate, measurable impact. When we execute MMPM correctly, the most direct outcome we see is that rapid, observable downregulation of the sympathetic branch. And it's achieved specifically through those sensory techniques. Think about expanding the visual field, the gaze, that immediately dampens amygdala activation. Or using a soft hum, providing direct vocal vagal stimulation right to the brainstem. We are intentionally targeting the brainstem and vagal pathways to induce safety right now. And the evidence does back this up. Safety learning and fear extinction success, which are critical precursors to that base safety you mentioned, they are strongly correlated with higher resting HRV. We achieve that elevated, more flexible HRV not through cognitive willpower, but by directly engaging the autonomic system with somatic cues.
We're effectively bypassing a cortical process that is often, frankly, too dysregulated to function properly in that state in the first place.
I appreciate the focus on those immediate, tangible shifts. Really, I do. But I have to disagree that the immediate cue activation is the primary long-term success driver. While those sensory cues are, yes, crucial inputs, they are the language of safety, as you said. The overall and sustained increase in HRV signals something much deeper, I think. It signifies autonomic calibration. It's a functional improvement in the system's integration, not just a one-off correction of a single prediction error. Think of HRV like the system's ability to dance, to flexibly respond to internal and external demands without getting stuck. That flexibility requires constant bidirectional communication. Studies by folks like Vager and Eisenbarth clearly demonstrated that cortical and subcortical systems continuously mediate cardiovascular responses to threat. They work together. Therefore, the successful sustained reduction in sympathetic arousal needs that continuous regulatory influence of those higher order regions acting dynamically on the autonomic systems. The integration is what makes the improvement stick, what makes it last.
You're focusing quite heavily on the regulation after the initial shift, but we have to first address the architecture of the emotional experience itself. We must fundamentally get to the seven emotional engines Panksepp described, right at their core, especially when they misfire. That painful feeling of separation, when the panic, grief system activates, or the sheer dread of fear, that's a preverbal, inherent biological circuit. We need multimodal signals, warmth, rhythmic movement, grounding pressure, to target these circuits directly. The goal, as I see it, is to shift from being constantly ruled by these automatic emotional engines to becoming wise stewards of them, you could say. This fundamental shift towards self-management requires deep, direct engagement with the subcortical feeling states, which Mark Solms even argues are the very origin of consciousness itself. If we change the feeling at the deepest biological level, the regulation will naturally follow that foundational shift.
That's a compelling way to describe the felt sense and the necessity of that direct engagement, absolutely. But I believe the ultimate goal is maybe less about stewarding separate engines and more about the comprehensive co-regulation and integration of the entire system. The neurovisceral integration model is pretty explicit about this. The higher order regions are designed evolutionarily to regulate these deeper life-sustaining circuits in a hierarchical way. Take, for example, the brainstem autonomic nuclei, like the nucleus ambiguus. They handle key regulatory functions, like heart rate deceleration in fear contexts. Now, while MMPM absolutely engages these circuits using breath and tone, the long-term behavioral outcome we're actually aiming for, that enhanced presence in relationships, the ability to resist automatically withdrawing or freezing, that comes from the strengthened connection, the prefrontal limbic coupling. This coupling acts like the system's skilled manager, better able to filter and process the constant influx of somatic data, regardless of which core emotional engine happens to be activated at any given moment. The integration is a positive effect, in my view. It transforms temporary safety learning into structural, enduring capacity.
Okay, so to summarize my perspective, functional recalibration begins and fundamentally occurs by introducing irrefutable evidence that prediction error at the primitive sensory and bodily level. This direct engagement establishes a new, safer prior. The system learns, viscerally, that an internal sensation can happen without the world ending, without the attendant threat. And this newly established prior provides the essential foundation that then informs all subsequent sustained regulation and integration. The foundation of safety has to be built bottom-up through that physiological correction.
Right. And my position remains that while, yes, the primitive layer accepts that evidence via sensory correction, the functional recovery and the enduring positive effect rely almost entirely on strengthening the communication pathways, the neurovisceral integration, this improved continuous feedback loop between the regulatory cortex and the autonomic structures is what ensures the system can maintain that critical base safety, and that ultimately transforms temporary physiological gains into permanent functional capacity.
What we certainly both agree on fundamentally is the truth that Damasio highlighted so powerfully. The brain and body form a unified, indivisible system. Thinking about the mind and the body as separate is just artificial when we're discussing true recovery.
Indeed. And understanding the precise relationship, the order of change, whether the correction or the connectivity holds primacy, is absolutely crucial for guiding the nervous system toward authentic trust and safety. Our exploration today of these, well, competing mechanisms really only serves to illuminate the incredible complexity inherent in achieving truly effective, lasting emotional regulation. There's certainly always more to explore within this material.